I think it's safe to say Kevin would fit into any style. I think with our players, the guys that we have already, I think that was attractive to him to be able to play with Draymond and Steph and Clay because of the way those guys play. You know, we have guys who are not just shooters, not just ball handlers. We kind of have a bunch of basketball players, and that's what's made our team really good the last couple of years. The other factor is, you know, everybody talks offense all the time. We had a pretty tough time in the playoffs with Kevin's length and versatility defensively, and of course that's kind of been our calling card as a defense the last couple of years, the versatility, the ability to switch, and Kevin fits perfectly into that style. It really does feel like it should be seamless, and that probably won't be the case. There's always some bumps, but it does feel like it's a perfect fit at both ends.
It's been hectic, you know, a lot of attention that comes with being in this position, and I knew that. And you know, when I met these guys, I felt as comfortable as I ever felt. It was organic, it was authentic, it was real. There's feelings I couldn't ignore, so you know, I made a decision to come in and play for these guys, and I feel great, and I feel excited about this opportunity. I was shocked that those four guys came in to meet me a couple of days ago. You know, I won 73 games in the championship before. You know, I didn't think that they would be interested in a player like me because they had so much success. But to see them together, they all walked in and looked like they were holding hands. You know, it was a family. I can tell they enjoyed being around each other. And that was, like I said, that was something I couldn't ignore. It was just great vibe throughout the whole day. So I'm glad I'm here, man. Like I said, I'm excited and I'm just ready to play ball. I just want to go out there and just whatever I need to work on, I'm sure it's going to reveal itself. But I want to just continue to just keep getting better, man. I want to learn from these guys. I want to come in and lead as best as I can and just be myself. I don't know what's going to get better throughout the year. It's just going to happen. You know, that's how I approach the game. I play off instinct, real spontaneous when I'm out there. So, man, I'm just trying to grow and get better and enjoy playing the game.
Welcome to the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
And a good afternoon to you. Thanks so much for joining us on ESPN 106.5 Yon Ticket. We are Toledo Sports Leader. Thanks so much for spending the time with us right here for the next 2 hours of what we like to call the Extravaganza. Coming up at 5 o'clock, you'll have Drive Time with Mike Miller. So all local talk, even though we will talk about issues far and wide in the sports world today, including some of the issues that are not quite related to sports going on down in Dallas, Texas, but certainly related to sports locally and around the country. That's why we call it an extravaganza, because we really do encompass a little bit of everything. So we'll start out with your phone number at 866-240-1065, 866-240-1065. Save that number, write it down. Matter of fact, it might behoove you to write it down in your smartphone. Save it in your contact list so you always have it and ready to dial whenever we're talking about something that interests you and you don't have to wait for me to give the number again. You'll always have it for us there. Also, don't forget you can tweet to us. Sports Radio 106.5 is the handle on Twitter and Facebook. You can leave comments there on stories that are of importance to you and or to us. You can even send them to us and post it on our page and we'll talk about it. At 106.5 The Ticket. So that's Facebook, 106.5 The Ticket, and Twitter, Sports Radio 106.5. Coming up on the extravaganza today on this, normally what we would call, I guess it still will be a free-for-all Friday. It's just that it's going to be a little more subdued, maybe than normal, because of the mood of the country right now, after we saw something horrific happen in Dallas, Texas. Obviously, and I have said this and maintained this and lived steadfastly by this since we started this show. Not quite 2 years ago. Believe it, it's been that, by the way. This October, it'll be 2 years that we've had the extravaganza on the air, and really, really appreciate that. But anyway, I've always maintained that what we do here on Sports Radio, on ESPN 106.5, The Ticket, what we do is we come here to play games. We come here to talk about games that have been played and the players that play them. We talk about things that just don't matter a whole lot in the real world. Meaning, of course, we talk about things that help us forget about other things. Talking about whether or not the Tigers, and Brad Ausmus did the right thing with his bullpen yesterday, or talking about the unbelievable Yankees bullpen that shut down the Indians in the ninth inning despite bases loaded, or when we talk about Kevin Durant's press conference, all this stuff is just diversion and distraction for us all from some of those horrific things that we really wish we could erase from our culture. There are some really bad things going on, and sometimes we just need a break from those. So because of that, it's been my mantra, my credo, whatever you want to call it, that when we come here, we leave politics outside. I do news radio, too, and I do sports radio, and news and political radio, and I try not to bring our world, the world of sports, over there. Because people who are listening to that want to listen to, the news and get bogged down into the real heavy stuff. They don't have time for flights of fancy, like games. And people who want to come here want to talk about games, and they don't have time and they don't have the interest in being beaten over the head with some of the really heavy stuff that is out there. So I really make it my business to separate the two. We do sports radio here, and I'm not going to get bogged down into politics and race and what happened in Dallas, Texas last night, or what happened in Minnesota or Baton Rouge, Louisiana, the last couple of days prior to that. Except to say, because there are a lot of people in the sports world today who are talking about that. A lot of people on sports radio today, sports television today, who are talking about that and talking about race and the role it plays, et cetera, and they're finding a way to draw connections between the outside world and our sports world. I'm just not going to do it. I'm just not. I criticized some things when people try to bring that outside stuff into our refuge from the world at large. These games, the courts, the fields, the diamonds that these games are played on, these are our places. This is the toy box of our lives. We don't want to have to do work all the time. We don't want to have to do heavy stuff all the time. These are our toy boxes where we go to relax and play. It's recess. That's what our sports world is to us. It's recess, unless you're employed in it, of course. But I criticized when some people try to bring that into our little recess period and into our toy box. I don't want to do that. I will simply say this. Our prayers, our condolences, our thoughts, and our best wishes are with everyone who was impacted in such a horrible way last night by the worst attack on our law enforcement community in the United States since September 11th of 2001. And that's just it. There are terrible things that happened. I feel very, very, very uneasy with the knowledge and the belief that there are going to be other terrible things that do happen. Maybe not in Dallas, maybe in Dallas. Maybe in Baltimore. Maybe in Cleveland, maybe in Detroit, maybe in St. Louis, maybe in L.A. I don't know. I know there are protests that are going to continue to go on around the country. We are going to pray that they all remain peaceful. We are going to pray that everyone understands that the answer is never violence or attacking and killing innocent people. And we will pray for the family members of those who have fallen. No matter what those circumstances were, we will pray for them. And that's where I'm going to leave it. Because I just don't want to get bogged down into something that is bogging me down, to be quite honest with you, in my personal life and in my professional life, in the realm in which those things fall. But this realm is sports. This realm is dedicated to the Tigers, the Indians, the Pistons, the Cavs, the Lions, the Browns, the Buckeyes, the Wolverines, the Spartans, the Fighting Irish, the Rockets, the Falcons. This is dedicated to, and of course, all of the teams in the respective leagues of the teams that I just named, including you just heard a great opening montage from Jim Cushlin with Kevin Durant's press conference yesterday, which kind of came on as we were going off the air in the last half hour yesterday, so we didn't get a chance to talk about KD's explanation as he met the media as to why he's now a Golden State Warrior. But this is our world for all of those things, and I just do not want the other stuff to intrude upon it. So I hope you'll understand that and respect that as we, again, try to find some respite, some refuge from all of those things that are going to be, unfortunately, a part of our life and a part of our culture for the unforeseen future. All right? So there we go. I have said that, and that's all I want to say about that. And now I want to get into what you're here for. When you turn on sports radio, you don't turn it on to hear news. That's why we're here. So let's get into it. Great opening montage, Jim Cushlin. Kevin Durant introduced to the media yesterday in Oakland, California. Golden State Warriors adding the former MVP, adding a multi-time scoring champion, adding one of the probably top three players in the game, along with LeBron James and with his new teammate, Steph Curry. And that's, of course, a matter of opinion for a lot of people, talking about why he did what he did and why he went where he went. And what a family atmosphere it seemed like when they came in, almost all hand in hand. It just looked like something really special. And it was really hard to leave, and the toughest thing I've ever had to do in my life was to call Oklahoma City and tell them, I'm not going to be coming back. I'm going to be going to sign with the Warriors. And all of that stuff is very interesting. No question about it. And some of it is actually very compelling. But you know what it isn't? What it isn't is any more acceptable. It's no more excusable as it was 4 days ago when we found out that Kevin Durant was going to go ahead and take the punk's way out. And I don't say that word to be too terribly disrespectful, and I know the word punk really can't be respectful. I don't have another way to say it. Wimping out just doesn't carry with it what it did in 1977. Wimping out. But it's what it is. Wimping out, punking out. I think Charles Barkley used the word cheating. You're just cheating to go get a title someplace else because you can't win one on your own where you are and all that other nonsense. I don't want to sound as horrible as it sounds, but Kevin Durant, to me, changing the landscape of the Western Conference, weakening one of the top two or three teams in the conference that was a conference and championship contender, while over-strengthening the number one team in the conference that was clearly another title contender and would be for the next couple, three, four, five, 6 years, to me is just a punky move. It is a weak move. It is a wimpy move. It is a lack of testicular fortitude displaying move. How does that sound? It's all of those things, and nothing that I heard from that dais yesterday really, really changes that. I get it. Look, you know, toughest thing I've ever had to do. I get all of it. But you know what? You didn't have to do. What you could have done is said, you know what? I want to come back. I want to come back and undo the damage that was done by the 3-1 blown Western Conference Finals lead we had. I want to undo that damage by getting those guys back on the court next year and finishing the job. That is just, quite frankly, how sports legends are made. It's how they're built. In the United States of America, you don't reach legendary status in your sport by leaving after losing and then winning with the team that beat you. That's not legendary. That team has already proven they don't need you to win championships. You adding on might help get them more championships, but it still doesn't make you a legend. A legendary guy is a guy who, and ironically enough, and I say this, you know, you know how hard I was on LeBron James when he left. You know how I felt about him coming back. And I questioned the sincerity and the genuineness of his decision, but it doesn't matter what the reason was. The truth of the matter is LeBron James is 10 times more legendary after winning a title in Cleveland where they couldn't win a title for their entire franchise history than he was for winning two titles in Miami where they had won one 3 years before him. He got there. It just is. His legendary status grew. His mythical, I mean, whatever you want to call it, his march toward one of the four spots on the NBA's Mount Rushmore was, you know, huge steps were taken. They've started carving already because of this one. That's how legends are born, and that's how legends are made. You want to be one of the greats of all time? And Kevin Durant, at 27 years of age, is on pace to be one of the greats of all time. He's one of the greatest scorers in the history of this game already, let alone when he hits age 37. What do you think he's going to do in the next 10 years? He's going to be great. He's always going to be remembered as being great. He will not be remembered to be a legend. He will not be remembered as a legendary figure, even if he wins two or three championships out in Oakland with Golden State on a team that he had to go and join. He had to coattail ride. Or how did Barkley put it as well? Instead of driving the bus to a title in Oklahoma City, he's a passenger. He's a bus rider in Golden State, or in Oakland, to be precise. And yesterday's press conference did nothing, in my opinion, to undo that. So we're going to be talking about that. We're going to ask for your thoughts on that. We're going to talk a little NBA. And, of course, yesterday we spent a great deal of time talking about Eastern Conference NBA as Dwayne Wade's seismic shift from the Miami Heat to the Chicago Bulls has led to all kinds of ancillary effects, to domino effects, if you will, including the Bulls needing to clear some space and sending Mike Dunleavy away to land nice and neatly with the defending champion Cavaliers. What does that do for them, if anything? We're going to talk to Dennis Manilow about that coming up in about 10 minutes or so and get his thoughts on Dunleavy, Wade going to Chicago, Kevin Durant's move, what he heard yesterday, and what that means for the Western Conference balance of power and the NBA in terms of the Cavaliers' chance to repeat. So we're going to talk about that with Maniloff. And then we're going to go at 4:05 today to Chicago, where we're going to talk to Jason Pat. He writes for bloggable.com. Get it? Blogable, B-U-L-L. Yeah, bloggable.com, the SB Nation site for the Bulls. We're going to talk to Jason about how they feel about the departure of Derrick Rose and Joakim Noah and the arrival of Dwayne Wade, among others. That's going to be a very interesting situation. Pau Gasol also gone, but Robin Lopez there. It's a very weird dynamic going on in Chicago. How do they feel about that and their chances to rebuild in the wake of the big move that sent Derrick Rose and Joakim Noah, of course, also leaving and going to New York to join Rose. So we're going to get into that with him. Also, a little baseball talk today. Both the Indians and the Tigers lost yesterday. The Indians 2 in a row now because they lost the series finale to the Tigers on Wednesday afternoon. Then they lose game one of a four-game set against the Yankees yesterday. And there's a little bit of controversy, if you want to call it that. A lot of people are being very critical of the way Brad Ausmus handled the Tigers' loss yesterday to the Blue Jays in game one of that series up north. And the All-Star break, according to some, can't come soon enough for the Tigers. We'll talk about that a little bit today as well. So we're going to bring it to you locally. We're going to bring it to you from across the country, the news, that is. By the way, we don't often talk tennis on this program. Not for any reason. It's not, you know, it's just not sexy sports talk, to be quite honest with you. It's just not. It doesn't mean I don't like it. I was a huge, huge fan of the game for a long time, in the 70s. Which is weird, even though I was and am, of course, an American. You know, my favorite players weren't American John McEnroe or American Jimmy Connors. My favorite player was Bjorn Borg from Sweden, who won the 5 straight Wimbledons in the late 70s, early 80s. You know, and that's kind of crazy. You would think that there's nationalism there. But I always loved Borg, and it was just kind of incredible the rivalries that were had there. And then as the years went on, same thing in the women's side. I was a huge fan of Chrissy Evert and her battles with Martina. Then I was a huge fan of Steffi Graf and the rivalry with Seles and all the way up through the Williams sisters and Serena's ongoing dominance. Agassi, there's Agassi versus Sampras, and I was a huge Andre Agassi fan. I don't know why, but I was a huge Andre Agassi fan. I just love the fact that he played in what looked like cut-off jeans shorts for the first few years of his career while everybody else was in dressed-down whites. Just the whole images, everything, and the style, and then the transition to shaving his long locks because he was going bald anyway, and finally becoming a complete tennis player, an 8-time Grand Slam champion. I've been a fan. But it's fun to watch. It's not really a whole lot to talk about on sports radio. But today, the upset of Roger Federer, who is one of the greatest players of all time, and you know the all-time a record holder for Grand Slams and all of the things that he is. You thought he had another chance to win Wimbledon one more time when Novak Djokovic, the number one player in the world, went out a couple of rounds ago. You thought that he was on his way to getting an 8th Wimbledon title, and instead he is cut short in the semis today by Milos Raonic, and I don't even know if I'm saying it right, big serving Canadian, who came back from 2-1 down to win in 5 and reach the final against Andy Murray on Sunday. Andy Murray, he's the 2013 champion. Congratulations to him for getting another opportunity to do great things for his home country in his home country. So that's a really great story there. But Roger Federer, who's kind of slowed down, he was, of course, passed in the rankings by Djokovic as well as by Rafael Nadal. He's up there in years, obviously, is Roger Federer. He is not going to dominate the sport the way he did for so long. The last time he won Wimbledon was in 2012, 4 years now. That's the most recent of his record 17 Grand Slam champions was 2012. He hadn't won a Grand Slam event in 4 years now. And I was really thinking this is his opportunity to add another one to the legacy. It's kind of like I said, I don't have any rooting interest in him. Much like I didn't have a whole lot of rooting interest in Tiger Woods when he was just winning, major after major after major. But I wanted to see that dominance and that championship run continue, and I kind of wanted to see it happen for Federer, too, and it didn't. So a little bit on that maybe today as well. So that's where we are. We've got a lot of NBA, we've got a lot of MLB, and we've got a little bit of tennis we're going to sprinkle in here as well as we continue on the extravaganza. Again, Maniloff will join us coming up here in about 5-6 minutes, and we will go to Chicago and talk to bloggable.com's Jason Pat about the Dwayne Wade move as well. If you've got thoughts on the free agency frenzy that has gone on in the last 5 or 6 days, let's hear from you. 866-240-1065. Do you agree that after listening to Kevin Durant yesterday that he kind of punked his way out of Oklahoma City and is trying to bus ride his way to a championship while Steph Curry and Klay Thompson drive it? Do you agree with that? Or do you think this is perfectly fine? I want to hear your thoughts on that after what you heard yesterday and much, much more. 866-240-1065, right here on the Extravaganza, ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Once again, it's the Bob France Extravaganza, ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Indeed, it does. The Extravaganza returns now at 3:34. Good afternoon to you. Thanks for listening to ESPN 106.5. The Ticket, going to stay in the NBA as we continue, but we are going to talk a little bit about baseball as well with our next guest. We have not talked to Dennis Mantiloff for a while. Dennis Mantiloff covers the Cleveland sports scene for Cleveland.com and the Cleveland Plain Dealer. He's also the author of an outstanding book you should pick up from Amazon called From A to Z, From Andrews to Zastadil. Indians lost last night to the Yankees in the first game of a four-game series prior to the All-Star break. And the Cavaliers made some news. They added a player that perhaps they didn't really expect the ability to add. Dwayne Wade made him expendable from the Chicago Bulls. And, of course, we talk of Mike Dunleavy. D-Man Dennis Mantiloff joins us for all of it. How you doing, brother?
Thank you for having me, Bob.
It is always a pleasure to have you. We want to talk a little American League Central as we head toward the All-Star break. We want to talk a little bit about the NBA. Before we get into some of those local things, and when I say local, I mean teams and divisions that we cover around here in Northwest Ohio, let's talk about what's going on in the Western Conference. Yesterday, Kevin Durant was introduced to the Oakland media, the Bay Area, as the newest member of the Splash Brothers. I don't know what they're going to call themselves out there now. I'm still not a fan of the move. I'm still not a fan of Kevin Durant really kind of hammering a final nail into the coffin of the rise up and beat your rivals era, which we were in for so long. We know that it's a different era now, but this one really kind of solidifies it when somebody leaves the team that just barely lost, that couldn't hold a 3-1 lead in the Western Conference Finals to join the team that came back and beat them. It's just a very terrible thing for me. KD was very humble. KD was very soft-spoken. KD was very kind and gracious to Oklahoma City. And none of it mattered to me during that press conference yesterday because I am still very upset by the move. What are your thoughts?
Well, I generally don't begrudge players, their right to move as free agents. Certainly in this era, as you say, Bob, the player seems to want to explore more. They don't. He does not want to stay in one place. So I don't have a problem with Durant going. I was a little surprised that he joined Golden State for the reason you articulated. I mean, he's joining the team that his Oklahoma City Thunder almost beat to get to the NBA Finals. And you wonder if Oklahoma City had closed it out and beaten Golden State and gone on to the finals and, let's just say, you know, lose or win, would Durant have joined Golden State under that scenario? I don't know, but it certainly was. It raised eyebrows.
Has that ever happened, Dennis? Has that ever happened where a superstar player, well, and maybe I'm going a little farther because I was going to say won a championship. That would have just been the Western Conference. You know, I think they would have had a really good chance. I think it would have been a great series to see Oklahoma City and the Cavs, too. I mean, they would have had a chance to win that. But if they had beaten Golden State and finished that out, as you say, and then also gone on to win a championship, I don't know if any star player has ever won a title and then left, rather than defend that title, left his team the very next year. Do you think that would have happened?
Yeah, I can't recall, Bob. You know what I think though is really prevalent in today's game, is relationships with individuals as opposed to ties with team. Now, that's not to say that players aren't loyal to the teams when they're playing for them. It's not to say that they don't come back, as LeBron demonstrated. Okay, he came back to the Cavaliers. But players today seem to want to play with other guys more even than the franchise, or they want to play with their friends. And from what I'm reading, you know, Durant is very tight with, for example, Draymond Green. He may have friends in Curry and Thompson, but it sounds like he's very close to Draymond Green. So that could have been a driving force, or it seems to have been a driving force to allow Durant to go there. So it's a different era, no question about it. But from the Cavaliers' perspective, I don't, necessarily worry about it, because, you don't have to see them until the finals to begin with. And I don't think it was one of those deals where, okay, just because Durant was added to the Warriors, the Cavaliers had to do something big. Had to, for example, try to trade Kevin Love. And maybe that's happening behind the scenes. I don't know. It certainly doesn't sound like it. But, I mean, I don't think you had to make a move if you're Cleveland just because Kevin Durant went to Golden State.
Yeah, and I don't necessarily disagree with that, and we can get back to that in a moment. I want to stay on the era thing before we get into the nuts and bolts. And the moves that were made, by the way, obviously with Dwayne Wade, and I'll get your thoughts on that in a second, which is ultimately going to end up in Mike Dunleavy being a Cavalier, which is interesting. But the era thing, you're right. I think in large part, a lot of these guys, or in some part anyway, a lot of these guys want to go play with one another, who are their friends. LeBron certainly started that because he and Wade are best friends. And Chris Bosh is very tight with them as well. We know how all that goes down, and it continues to, rather than for a franchise. But to me, again, the competitive, there were a lot of guys who were really good friends in the NBA in the 1980s. There were a lot of guys who were good friends in the NBA in the 1990s that would not have thought of, hey, man, you got us. You beat us, and you know what? Rather than getting into the gym earlier in the off season and rededicating myself to taking that next step and punking you back next year, save a uniform for me, man. I'm coming over. I want to come over and join you and rather than beat you and come back. They just didn't do that, and they wouldn't do that, and that's the attitude that I think that is gone, that is going to kill, in my estimation, the current era. You're going to have all of these guys who'd rather play with their buddies and win championships together against 24 or 25 Washington Generals out there that have no stars or no chance of beating these teams, and they're happy with that rather than trying to beat one another 82 nights a year. And I just think it is bad for basketball. It is bad for sports, and I don't know. It's bad for, in my mind, it's bad for kids. It's bad for, not that they haven't had the duty to raise kids, but it's bad for young sports. As people, we don't see the comebacks and the revenge series this year from last year. We see guys going over to play with the guys that beat them instead of getting revenge on them, D-Man, and it's just bad.
Well, who agrees with you, at least from the reports that we all believe to be accurate, Tyronn Lue. You think about how interesting the Cavaliers season was, and one of the things that supposedly was an important turning point was Lou's disgust with LeBron James, buddying up with Dwayne Wade in Miami.
Yep.
At halftime, when Miami was punking and clowning and embarrassing the Cavaliers. LeBron comes out at half and he's chit-chatting with Dwayne Wade, and that supposedly, reportedly, rubbed Lou the wrong way, and Lou talked to LeBron about it, and I don't think we're going to see that again. That type of thing. I mean, I'm sure when LeBron sees the Bulls and sees Wade, he's going to give him his usual hug and smile and all that, but I don't think we're going to get it to the extent that we did. The point being is that Lou, I'm not going to say relit the competitive fire in LeBron, because we know he's a very competitive guy, but he kind of told LeBron, hey, it's bad optics, okay, at the very least. We know you're a competitor, you're the four-time MVP, you're a great player, you're the best in the game, but it doesn't look good, all right? And other guys feed off of you, they see that, and they wonder if it's okay, perhaps. And maybe that leads to a softening of the competitive edge. So, at the very least, Ty Lue agrees with you on that.
There seems to be more, and this isn't just basketball. There seems to be more today of the, we are all on the same team. Our team is the NFLPA. Our team is the NBAPA. Our team is the Major League Baseball Players Association. We're all one team, and we go in for 6 months a year. We split up and go into different places, but we're kind of all still on the same team. We're all friends. That seems to be as much of the problem, if you see it as a problem, and I do, as anything. Again, yep. Back in the 60s, 70s, and 80s, these guys saw one another as the enemy. We weren't just the enemy when we stepped on, between the lines. If we lost you, we disliked you even more. And I'm going to break my butt to come back and beat you, not join you. And I think that the union, you know, the unions versus the owners has created a lot of camaraderie among guys that should be enemies for competitive reasons, for the sake of competition, which is why they play these games. And that's, they work out with one another in the summer.
Yeah.
You know, and again, you know, opposing teams that are going to play each other in the playoffs 5 months from now are pushing one another. Come on, man. Come on, man. They're running sprints together. They're doing drills together. And again, this is happening in all sports, but particularly football and basketball, Dennis. And again, I just think it's bad for competition. And if it's bad for competition, well, it's bad for the sport itself.
You're right. And I just remember this. There were reports that people had raised eyebrows about Durant talking with Green during the Western Conference Finals this past season. So that speaks to your point. But I think it is, Bob, and this is just me thinking off the top of my head, it comes down to the amount of money that's available today, okay? When you have the piles of cash that are being, accrued by these leagues, what happens, I think, is that players do align with the unions more so even than the teams, because they want to make sure they get paid. And it does become a player versus owner, or at least the player versus owner dynamic, exacerbated, because back in the day, you know, the one we always refer to, you know, back in the competitive days when the guys hated each other and all that stuff, there wasn't the amount of money that was being thrown around, so there wasn't the need to align yourself with something that focused on the cash. I mean, look at the NBA players, LeBron being one of them, with the short deals and the opt-outs. I mean, years ago you would have thought, oh, the superstar is the first player who's going to sign long-term, you know, because he's going to want to guarantee all these millions of dollars, so he's going to sign a 7 or 8 year deal. It's the reverse now. The superstars, at least in the NBA, are not signing the long-term deals. They're betting on themselves because they know they're great. They're just hoping they stay healthy.
Right.
And they're maintaining flexibility. Well, why are they maintaining flexibility? Number one, so they can move around so that they're not beholden to one owner. And number two, and perhaps 1A, is they can maximize their dollar value based on a changing salary cap. So money really is at the core, I think, of this sea change that you're talking about.
The only thing that kind of flies in the face of that is a guy like, well, LeBron took less money to go to Miami. Kevin Durant is taking less money than he could have re-signed for long-term in Oklahoma City as the team that had his rights, et cetera, et cetera. But then we see Dwayne Wade, which we talked about a lot yesterday. Here's a guy who, quite frankly, said enough of taking less money. I took less money in the last three contracts I signed with Miami because I wanted to give them flexibility to add to our roster and build a championship team. And I was the good soldier, and I was under the impression that I was going to get taken care of on the back end. At least that's how it appears. Whether he was told that or just assumed that, we don't know. But he finally said, if you're going to lowball me like this, fine. I don't have to end my career in one uniform. I'll go back to Chicago, back to where I'm from, and I'll play with them for a couple of years. And this one is all about money. What was your takeaway from Dwayne Wade? And to me, it was much more shocking than Kevin Durant leaving Oklahoma City. Dwayne Wade bailing out on South Florida.
Yeah, you know what, Bob? At first I wanted to say I was shocked, but then I thought about LeBron James, and I believe in my gut, I don't have a source on this, but all the tea leaves I read and everything else, all the research I did when he made his decision to come back here, I believe one of the reasons LeBron James came back to Cleveland is because of friction between him and Mickey Aronson, more so even than Pat Riley. Now, I think Riley fanned the flames with that unhinged presser, but I think the Riley presser in the summer of 14 resulted from the discord that had erupted between LeBron and Aronson. And to me, it certainly sounded like a similar type of deal where LeBron was saying, you know, I want to get paid. And again, my gut here, I can't stress that enough. Aronson's saying, well, you need to take a little bit of a pay cut in order to keep all the stars here. In order to keep everybody in place, LeBron, you're going to have to be a good soldier. And LeBron's like, no, I'm not going to do that anymore. I'm going somewhere else. In the case of Wade, you're right. He's looking for that career appreciation contract, the make goods, and the Heat saying, well, sorry, it's not coming. Now, I've heard a lot of people applauding Pat Riley and by extension Aronson for saying, we're not going to, you know, hamstring our team going forward by rewarding or awarding a career contract. But, and that sounds great, except you're in the people business. And what you did was, by digging in like that, you sent packing the number one symbol of your franchise.
Right.
Because it's not the owner of the team. It's not Pat Riley. It's not Eric Spoelstra. It's not Bosch. It's Dwayne Wade. Dwayne Wade is the Miami Heat.
And Dwayne Wade is more than that. We were talking yesterday. Dennis, we were talking yesterday. Dan Le Batard, who, of course, he does ESPN Radio and is a longtime personality, does his show from Miami where he has written for the Herald for a long, long time. He said Dwayne Wade has surpassed Dan Marino as the most beloved Miami sports athlete in history of Miami. It doesn't matter what sport, that he has passed Marino. And when he left, that's maybe as big a blow, even though he's not from South Florida, the way LeBron was from Akron, Ohio, so close to Cleveland, Ohio, but it may have been, you know, as big of a blow to that sporting scene down there as LeBron leaving is, especially given the fact that this was so easily fixable if Aronson slash Riley had been willing to give him a third year at $20 million a year.
Right, and you wonder why, number one, I'm a player's advocate over an owner's advocate. I'm almost always in favor of the player. And number two, you wonder why players don't want to be flexible and why they don't want to be beholden to owners, because they potentially could get into these situations. I mean, you know, we're talking about, you can't get into this situation, are you telling me you're feeling sorry for Dwayne Wade? He's a multi-gazillionaire anyway. You know, what difference does it make? Look, we're talking about different stratospheres here. I'm saying within the NBA game, within the NBA structure, there's a situation where Dwayne Wade could say, I was underpaid. You know, vis-a-vis the average person in our country, of course he's old, you know, he's getting a lot of money. But in this point, he has a right to say, I want to make good. And the Heat said no, and so Wade said, all right, I'm out.
We don't know if there was a make good promise, and I get the sense that there was. I really do, because you just don't see it. You don't see a guy of his magnitude with his level of cash, if you will, and his stroke in that city and in that organization making those decisions to forego more money three straight times in order to help the franchise without at least a handshake, gentleman's agreement that they will, you know, do the make good later on. I can't believe he just did it out of the goodness of his heart and then hoped they would take care later. I feel like he was probably lied to. I feel like he was told by either Aronson or Riley or both that we will do something for you to, if you'll give us that flexibility now. And when they didn't, that's when it was like, then you know what? I'm done. I'm willing to give up his legacy, but I'm willing to, you know, finish my career in another uniform rather than be the longtime, one-time Miami Heat player, the icon, et cetera, et cetera. The way Bird stayed in Boston, the way Magic stayed in L.A., et cetera, et cetera. I feel like he was probably lied to, and it's the only thing that could have driven him away in such a huff where he was very, very angry.
Yeah, and I think that's maybe based on my theory, it's the underreported or underappreciated element to the LeBron saga, okay? Because we all talked about, oh, LeBron's coming home. It's an amazing decision by LeBron to come back to the Cavaliers and guarantee or at least promise that he's going to win a title. But what wasn't talked about is why would LeBron James leave a franchise that he went to join largely because he wanted to be with his buddies, his really good buddy Dwayne Wade and his buddy Chris Bosh.
Yeah.
He had played just 4 years with them. They went to four finals. They won twice. Why did he want to leave? And we all were sitting here in Cleveland saying, well, he wanted to leave because he wanted to come home. Well, to me, there had to be, a match that was lit down there that ignited something in LeBron to prompt him to leave. And that, I believe, was the front office and the management, the ownership of the Heat, which said something or dug in against LeBron that he didn't like, and that was the trigger. That got him started about thinking, you know what, I'm going somewhere else, and the best place to go somewhere else would be Cleveland.
Yeah, I think there was certainly a match lit. It may be a lot of what you just described. I am aware of a number of other things that led to that match being lit that I will not get into right now because we don't have the time, and nor is it really the right forum. But there was certainly something that was far, far beyond basketball, I can tell you that much. Real quick, Mike Dunleavy now, because Wade goes to the Chicago Bulls, is a casualty. They had to clear space. He's going to be a Cavalier. Good news is he's a 37% career three-point shooter. He's been a very, very dangerous scorer at times, either off of the bench or just depending on the circumstances, when his better-known teammates like Derrick Rose are down. Bad news is he's coming off a back injury. Scored a career-low 7 points a game this past season. What does he bring to the defending champions roster?
Well, the ability to snipe, hit the three. You figure he's going to get a lot of open looks, and he'll be able to knock them down. I like the toughness. He's feisty. The Duke orneriness that we kind of don't like when we watch him, but then you like him when they're on your team. It wasn't so long ago, Bob, it was 2015 playoffs when Dunleavy was being a pain to the Cavaliers in the second round of the Eastern Conference. So I like the pickup, especially given the fact that the Cavaliers had virtually no wiggle room, and they essentially got him for free and did get him as a result of the Dwayne Wade going to Chicago. So excellent pickup for the Cavs. He's not going to be a dominant player by any stretch, but given what they were able to do in the first place, it's a nice piece.
Last thing, we talked about the whole era of players wanting to beat one another that just beat them instead of joining one another the way Kevin Durant just did. The other angle of all of this is what does it do to the balance of power in the West? Is this just a one-team conference now? Is it a foregone conclusion? Is there anything the Spurs can do to slow this juggernaut down?
No.
How do you how does anybody defend a pick and roll with Curry and Kevin Durant, for crying out loud? Because what this did is it made the best team in the conference that much better, and it made one of the top two contenders behind them in the conference almost irrelevant. No disrespect to Russell Westbrook, but from that standpoint, is the West over already here in July? And secondly,
pretty much.
Is that good for basketball?
Pretty much over. Yes, good for basketball. Not necessarily, except. Even the bottom feeder teams, owners are ecstatic to be owning their team because they go to bed in a pile of cash, in a mattress and pillowcases that are stuffed with cash. So don't feel sorry for the owners in the 80 to 90% of teams in the NBA who don't have a chance because they're making money off the backs of the super teams who are having tremendous ratings, which bring in advertisers and then trickles it down to everybody. So the Western Conference, all but done. Yeah, you can talk what you want about San Antonio or what have you, but it's all window dressing. The Golden State, it would stun me if Golden State does not go back to the NBA Finals again, and it would actually shock me if they don't challenge 73-9 again. They're that good. I don't know how you stop them offensively, except for banging them around for 48 minutes like the Cavs did in games 3 through 7 of the NBA Finals. So by no means you concede the title to them, but to me you concede the West.
I think that's fair enough. And D-Man, we'll have to catch up on baseball maybe for, perhaps sometime next week because we're out of time now. Thanks for your NBA analysis as always. Have a great weekend. We'll talk soon.
You got it, bud.
Thanks so much. Here's Dennis Mandeloff straight from Cleveland. He covers Cavaliers, Browns, Indians, and the rest. And he's got a great book out. It's called From A to Z, Andrew's Disaster. Look for it on Amazon. All right, we're going to take a time out here at the top. We're going to keep some conversation in the NBA going because the one we talked to Miami yesterday, and we've talked to Oklahoma City, who lost Kevin Durant a couple of days before that. The only other outside city outside of our area we really haven't talked to regarding these NBA super deals or super, you know, seismic shifts in power is Chicago. Why did they want Dwayne Wade? Is this a good fit or a great fit for them? I can tell you who doesn't think it is such a great fit. Chicago media, because the Chicago Tribune sports page yesterday included this gem, a huge color photo of Dwayne Wade. And at the top, the headline, Plan A. Sounds good so far, right? He's Plan A. That's who we wanted. But then in parentheses, ARP. Plan AARP. Ouch. That has got a sting. Why did they want to pay that money to Dwayne Wade? Is he going to make Chicago a factor in the Eastern Conference even after the departures of Derrick Rose and Pau Gasol and Joakim Noah? We're going to talk to Chicago by way of Jason Pat, who blogs at Bloggable, meaning B-U-L-L, blogable.com, the SB Nation Chicago Bulls website. So that's coming up after the top of the hour, which is now. Also, during this top of the hour break, how about you dial this phone number, 866-240-1065, if you would like a four-pack of tickets to the Marathon Classic, which starts on Monday at Highland Meadows in Sylvania. You want a four-pack of tickets to the golf event, we'll send you there if you're caller 10 right now. 866-240-1065, back after this.
I think it's safe to say Kevin would fit into any style. I think with our players, the guys that we have already, I think that was attractive to him to be able to play with Draymond and Steph and Clay because of the way those guys play. You know, we have guys who are not just shooters, not just ball handlers. We kind of have a bunch of basketball players, and that's what's made our team really good in the last couple of years. The other factor is, you know, everybody talks offense all the time. We had a pretty tough time in the playoffs with Kevin's length and versatility defensively, and of course that's kind of been our calling card as a defense the last couple of years, the versatility, the ability to switch, and Kevin fits perfectly into that style. It really does feel like it should be seamless, and that probably won't be the case. There's always some bumps, but it does feel like it's a perfect fit at both ends.
It's been hectic, you know, a lot of attention that comes with being in this position, and I knew that, and you know, when I met these guys, I felt as comfortable as I ever felt. It was organic, it was authentic, it was real. There's feelings I couldn't ignore, so you know, I made a decision to come in and play for these guys, and I feel great, and I feel excited about this opportunity. I was shocked that those four guys came in to meet me a couple of days ago. You know, I won 73 games and a championship before. You know, I didn't think that they would be interested in a player like me because they had so much success. But to see them together, they all walked in and looked like they were holding hands. You know, it was a family. I could tell they enjoyed being around each other. And that was, like I said, that was something I couldn't ignore. It was just a great vibe throughout the whole day. So I'm glad I'm here, man. Like I said, I'm excited, and I'm just ready to play ball. I just want to go out there and just whatever I need to work on, I'm sure it's going to reveal itself. But I want to just continue to just keep getting better, man. I want to learn from these guys. I want to come in and lead as best as I can and just be myself. You know, I don't know what's going to get better throughout the year. It's just going to happen. You know, that's how I approach the game. I play off instinct, real spontaneous when I'm out there. So, man, I'm just trying to grow and get better and enjoy playing the game.
This is the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Indeed, it is an extravaganza, and we continue right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. We are Toledo's sports leader. I'll begin hour number two in the same way that I began hour number one, by offering prayers and condolences and thoughts to the families of the fallen officers in Dallas, Texas, in that horrific attack last night. It was just terrible. indefensible, and something that I hope is going to be a teachable moment, if you will, for virtually everybody in this country, no matter what your differences are. Never is there an excuse for that type of violence, that type of an inexplicable assault and attack on innocent people. No matter how angry you are about one situation, you cannot take it out in violence on another situation. I will leave it there. As I said, I will not bring politics onto our sports program, just like I will not bring sports onto my political program. This is what we do. We're gonna pray for those who need our assistance, pray for peace on the streets tonight and throughout the rest of this weekend, as these sorts of things tend to balloon and grow and just kind of feed on themselves until there is more tragedy. So let's pray that that does not happen over the weekend, and we will leave that there. You just heard another nice montage of yesterday's introduction of Kevin Durant to the media in Oakland, California. The Western Conference power, of course, has already resided in Oakland with Golden State, 73 wins and a trip to the finals for the second straight year. They were the power broker. Now they are the sole power. They are the only power. They are the one and the only in the Western Conference, as our friend Dennis Manilow just said. The addition of a former MVP. In fact, they now have the last three MVPs on one roster. Curry's two in a row, preceded by Durant's, along with All-Stars in Green and Klay Thompson. And my goodness, it is just going to be something to behold watching those guys play next year. I will not like it, by the way, because I cannot stand the Warriors. And I really don't like the move because I really liked, past tense included, Kevin Durant when he was with the Oklahoma City Thunder, the only franchise he had known. So we're going to watch that, and we're going to follow that, and it's going to be very interesting. What else is interesting is the balance of, and I can't say power, because power rests solely with the Cavaliers in the Eastern Conference. I know the Pistons would like to step up and become powerful. Certainly, they would like to build upon their most recent playoff, their first playoff in the last 6 years. They would like to do better than get swept in the first round, obviously. The Hawks are no longer going to be a part of this equation. The Boston Celtics are going to be improved, but they're still not a power team. The Toronto Raptors are a bit of a power team. They, of course, made it to the finals of the Eastern Conference. But the Heat and the Bulls, a couple of teams, we'll leave out the Pacers for the moment, for the time being, but the Heat and the Bulls, a couple of teams that, they're going to be very, very different in 2016 than they were in 2015. And, of course, we speak of the fact that Dwayne Wade is no longer a member of the Miami Heat. Derrick Rose is no longer a member of the Chicago Bulls, nor is Joakim Noah or Pau Gasol. Wade is a Bull. Rose and Noah are Knicks, and Gasol is a Spur. What does that do to the Eastern Conference? Joining us now to talk about it from the Chicago side of things. We talked to Miami yesterday. We talked to Oklahoma City, talked to Oakland. But now we want to talk to Chicago. The two biggest moves of the offseason thus far, Durant and Wade. And it is indeed the Chicago Bulls that acquire the future Hall of Famer from Miami. Jason Pat writes for bloggable.com. That's the SB Nation Bulls website, blogabull, get it, .com. Joining us now on ESPN 106.5, The Ticket. Jason, how are you doing this afternoon?
I am doing well. How about yourself?
Fantastic, sir. Thank you for spending the time with us. I got to ask you first off about the greeting that Dwayne Wade is getting from the Chicago media, or at least by way of the Chicago Tribune, the full-color photograph, and I guess this was on yesterday's paper. Maybe you can clarify that for me, but the full-color picture of Dwayne Wade and the great big 50-point font, Plan A, above him, followed by parenthetically ARP, Plan AARP. He's 34, not 40. Is that the mentality that a lot of folks in Chicago have, that this is an aging Dwayne Wade who's not that big of a piece anymore?
First of all, in terms of what paper that was, I'm not sure if it was today or yesterday. I don't get the newspaper, so I'm not totally sure. But it was
The Chicago Tribune. Yeah, it was the Tribune that ran that.
Yeah, I see. I saw it online. I didn't see the actual paper itself, but I saw that headline, and honestly, like, the actual sentiment in the actual, like, the columns that were written, I do kind of understand. Like, the Bulls have had some history of kind of bringing in guys that weren't exactly in their prime. Like, way back in the day, but back in the 2000s, they signed Ben Wallace to a big contract, but he was kind of past the prime of the Pistons. That didn't turn out well. They just, a couple years ago, they signed Pau Gasol, and while Pau was pretty good, it didn't really work out totally for the Bulls. They missed the playoffs last year, and 2 years ago, they lost to the Cavs in the second round. So now, this year again, they Gar Foreman, general manager, said that their edict was we're going to get younger and more athletic, so they traded away Derrick Rose, and they let Joakim Noah and Pau Gasol go, and then they go out and they sign Rajon Rondo and Dwayne Wade. So that's kind of where the AARP thing comes. Instead of getting younger and more athletic, they sign a couple older dudes. And while D-Wade is still a really good player, like you said, he's 34, but his knees might be a little closer to 40. he was mostly healthy last year. I know the Heat had him on a really regimented health plan to keep him as healthy as possible. I think he played like 74 games. That's the most.
Yeah, that's
in the pile. He's still mostly effective. He's still a good scorer, 20 points per game, solid distributor. But his defense is kind of slipping. His efficiency scoring has slipped. He still also had some big playoff games, which is always cool to see. But overall, I mean, this is not, we're not talking about 2010 D-Wade when the Bulls were going after him when they formed the Big Three in Miami. So I hope people's expectations aren't on the level where they're going to get this vintage Dwayne Wade night after night. It's going to be a struggle some nights for him. And so he is going to be 35 soon. His knees aren't great anymore. So it's, they're getting a good player still, but it's not going to be, like I said, vintage D Wade every night.
Yeah, I don't think anybody thinks you're getting vintage D Wade, because if you were, you wouldn't be getting him for, you know, the contract he's getting with 2 years and 47. It would certainly be much, much more than that, and probably it would take a long-term deal to get him. But he is still, you know, a guy who averaged 19 and almost 5 and 5 in assists and rebounds last year. And more importantly, and this is just in a matter of opinion, to me, he is so much more of a professional offensive player. When being teamed with an all-star like Jimmy Butler, he's so much more of a professional offensive player than a guy like Derrick Rose was. I have never been a big Derrick Rose fan. I'll tell you that right now. I think Chicago did the right thing by getting out of that contract and getting him, letting him go to Chicago and making that deal. And so to me, Jimmy Butler and, you know, the guys that are left, and I know it also hurts because he had to lose Mike Dunleavy, and not that this past season was much of a year for him with his back injury and surgery and so on, but basically all of the players that, you know, used to have to stand around and watch Derrick Rose aren't going to have to do that with Dwayne Wade, because he's not that kind of a player and he's not that kind of a leader. And I think he'll be a great, I won't say mentor, but I think he'll be a great teammate and maybe, you know, older type of star for Jimmy Butler to work with than maybe Derrick Rose was.
Yeah, I agree with you on the Rose thing. I mean, I was growing up in Chicago, and what he did before all the injuries, he was obviously great, but he just hasn't been that player in a while, and quite frankly, it was time to move on. So I definitely agree on that front. In terms of Wade, I think the Wade signing, like by itself, I think would have been pretty good. Where I think it's going to be really interesting to see is the fact that they also brought in Rondo, because this has been one of the big talking points of this, is just the fact that they're going to be having Rondo, Butler, and Wade all together on the court a lot of times. It's going to be really strange. Kind of awkward. None of them are, they're all guys who like the ball in their hands, all dominant players, can't really shoot from the outside, so defenses are probably going to really pack in the paint and dare to beat them from the outside. And it's going to be up to them and Fred Hoiberg to try to figure out how to make that really work, because like I said, teams are going to game plan against them because they know their weaknesses, and some guys are going to have to sacrifice, because Butler, a big part of his game last year was he took a bigger responsibility away from Derrick Rose as a ball handler, as a playmaker. That might have to take a step back, and who knows if he'll appreciate that. You hope maybe with these other veteran guys there that they'll embrace that, but it's going to be something that'll be interesting to see, because while it could be all right, I think it also has the possibility of kind of going off the rails if the fit isn't right and if Hoiberg can't really reel them in and get them on the same page.
Yeah, that's a great point. We're talking with Jason Pat, who covers the Chicago Bulls for blogabull.com, the SB Nation Chicago Bulls site. It really seems like this team, based on the fact, as you point, I mean, Hoiberg has been more of an offensive coach. He's an offensive, innovative coach, and he's probably going to want shooters more than this team, which is going to be pack it in, and it's going to have to play great defense type of a roster, at least as we see it right now. It almost looks like this particular incarnation of a Bulls roster would have been better suited for the former coach, Tom Thibodeau, than it was, or it is, for Fred Hoiberg. Do you think he will be able to adjust to this kind of a group?
I do agree with the point about Tibbs. I think especially with more the ISO ball and getting them to play defense, because you mentioned the defense. It's going to be tough for this group to play elite defense like that they'll need to play, because Rondo and Wade have slipped defensively in recent years. Rondo, I'm not sure if it's the injury, if it's just apathy. I know last year Kings writers, media have said that fans have said that he was just a disaster defensively. And Wade is just getting up there in age. He can't, when he's putting so much effort on defense that he just can't do it, or on offense that he can't do it as much defensively anymore. And the Bulls don't have a Joakim Noah there to defend anymore. They do have Robin Lopez, but he's not that great. And like you said, Hoiberg's not really a defensive coach. So him getting them not only to buy into his offense with some of these mismatched parts, but then also getting the defense to play well, I'm not really sure if he'll be able to do it, especially because his personality isn't quite on the level of Tibbs. He doesn't have that kind of respect from the players. At least it doesn't seem that way, and he's not that kind of just domineering coach. And while that's not always the best in terms of Tibbs' style, maybe for a team like this it would be. So it's, like I said, I'm not sure if it's going to be that good. I keep using the word interesting and possibly entertaining just because there is a lot of talent there. It's just kind of not – just so awkward fitting that I'm just not sure if it's actually going to be that good. I guess you could say there is upside of it being pretty good. I don't think, like, title contender good, but like I said, there's also the variance where it could also be really bad because the fit is weird and it's not that great with the coach either.
Yeah, what is interesting about it is literally just 2 years ago when LeBron James came back from Miami to Cleveland, and Cleveland automatically became the favorite again, and especially when they added Love and the whole Kyrie thing with the long term. A lot of people said, you know, who's the second best team in the division? Who's the second best team in the Eastern Conference? A lot of people said Chicago, Bulls. This is going to be the biggest threat. And they're talking about a very, very different team, but it was only two very, very short years ago. We're talking about an Eastern Conference title contending Bulls team. It was thought, you know, with the rise of Jimmy Butler as a star. Obviously, Derrick Rose coming back from injury is going to go back to MVP form. Pau Gasol, the all-star. Joakim Noah, the dominant defender, and all the rest. It was expected that this was going to be a real, you know, contender for the Eastern Conference. And look where we are today. What do the fans feel about this sudden makeover of the roster where it's Rajon Rondo, who has done nothing but alienate people, great all-star capable player, certainly, but alienate people, you know, an aging Dwayne Wade, as we discussed, and so on. And so Robin Lopez, not the defender that Joakim Noah is. How do the fans there feel about this?
A lot of the fans, I think, are probably just excited just with Dwayne Wade's big name, familiar, coming home to Chicago. People are excited about that, even if, and I think there's probably some people that don't, they see Dwayne Wade and they think that he's not, like I said, not vintage D Wade, we kind of talked about this before, but I think that maybe he's still a little better than he might be at this point, and because Rondo's the same way. So there's always going to be people that are super optimistic about adding two name caliber players like that have shown the ability to be all-stars and win championships. But I think there's also a lot of people that are realistic about this, that they are aging players and that they're probably, like I said, I think realistically the Bulls are probably, the Cavs are obviously at the top of the East, dominant, way above everybody else. Teams like the Raptors and Celtics are probably that next tier. Mm-hmm. And then the Bulls could probably slot in with a bunch of other teams after that in a third or fourth tier of teams that could be pretty darn good, but if things go their way, but maybe not. So, like, I think realistically, the Bulls are now looking at a team that's probably lower end playoff team. Maybe they could get up to a 4 or 5 seed. They could also, like I said, there's so much variance that they could also miss the playoffs. There are a lot of other decent, good teams in the East that aren't great, but they're pretty good. And there's some other teams on the rise. I mean, if the Knicks got Rose and Joakim Noah, if they're actually good and they got some other nice pieces as well, maybe they rise. It seems like the Magic, a lot of young talent. Maybe they rise. The Pacers will be better. So the Bulls are kind of in a mix of decent Eastern Conference teams. I think most fans are realistic about that, and they're not expecting them to go make a deep run to the Eastern Conference Finals and actually challenge the Cavaliers. But they're just not that good. So we'll see about how it shakes out.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And I guess that makes good sense if that's their attitude. We know we're not a championship team, so at least we get to enjoy watching a hometown star come back. Of course, he went to Marquette, did Dwayne Wade, but back in his hometown of Chicago to see him play is, who knows if it's his last 2 years, if he's got another contract in him after that. I can certainly see the entertainment value for the Bulls fans. Let me ask you this, going to the Western Conference, because I'm asking everybody about this. Is it good for the NBA that Kevin Durant has joined a 73-win team that's been in the NBA Finals the last 2 years? Forget about how good the Warriors are. Is it good for the league that probably what most people consider to be a top three player just joined a 73-win championship team?
I wouldn't say it's bad, because I think even though it does, I mean, it's bad in terms of like competitive balance, parity, and stuff like that. But, I mean, the NBA has always been about dynasties, and I mean, even when the league was at its most popular in the 90s, I mean, the Bulls dynasty, there were all these other dynasties, the Lakers, the Celtics. I mean, there's always been, the league has been popular with all these super teams, and I think the Warriors are going to be super popular. I don't think, like, ratings will suffer or anything like that. I think people are going to tune in to watch them. It's just going to be, they're going to be a spectacle every night, and obviously the Cavs are still really good, and there's still plenty of other really interesting things going on around the rest of the league that I think people will be interested in, even if the ending is probably set in stone where it's probably going to be Warriors-Cavs again in the finals. So I wouldn't say it's necessarily bad, and I don't know if it's, like, really good, and I do wonder that if this move will possibly mean that a lockout will come just with how this came together and how with the contracts and CBA. I do wonder if maybe that might be a negative aspect of it, and with the owners or whatever, even just this free agency in general, will make them want to get back to the negotiating table and change the CBA so something like this can't happen again. Maybe that could be a negative fallout. But overall, in terms of, like, interest in the league, I don't think it's really going to dip that much. But I think there's the team, a lot of people will be interested to watch the Warriors, and there's still a lot of really other interesting storylines out there besides them.
Yeah, I guess there will certainly be a lot of people want to watch an entertaining team that might seem to, you know, be ready to score 130 points a night based on their personnel. There is interest in that, but I wonder how many fans in 25 cities are going to be really thrilled with the product night after night when the realization hits them that there's only five cities really that have a chance at doing anything, even when we get, you know, yeah, you're going to have 16 teams in the playoffs, but really there's four or five super teams that have kind of assembled all of the talent together, and everybody else is the Washington Generals. Are they going to lose interest in it after a while, and even maybe after a short while, given this consolidation of talent in very, very small places?
I mean, maybe, like I said, just going back, even like I said, to the, even when the NBA was most popular with Jordan's Bulls, I feel like then it was kind of the same thing. Most people thought that the Bulls were on top, and then there were a couple other really good teams, and then a lot of other teams, and the NBA was still popular. The Bulls are so popular, I don't think this Warriors team will ever be on there, but I feel like the NBA has always been like that. Even this past year, there was basically the Warriors, the Cavs, the Spurs, and the Thunder, and then maybe a team like the Clippers. It seems like every year there's usually like four or five teams that really separate themselves from the Packers contenders, and then there's the rest of the league. So I don't know how much really changes other than you'll have the Warriors, the Cavs, and then maybe the Spurs. Maybe instead of four or five teams this year, there's two or three instead, so maybe that does hurt a little bit. Like I said, I still think there will be enough interest from fans that just like watching their team and like watching what their teams are building that it won't hurt the league that much. I think it's the West mostly,
Jason, that I'm talking about. You know, because every year it's so much fun. Who's coming out of the West? Who's coming out? I mean, the Thunder are loaded. Did you see the Grizzlies? Not this past year they were hurt, but the previous year, rising up and being one of the top three teams. The Spurs, a championship contender every year. The Warriors going to the finals 2 years ago, winning a championship. The Clippers loaded for bear as well, especially bringing DeAndre Jordan back after that. I mean, it was like, the West is going to be for the Blazers. Steve, you talk about the Blazers rising and rising faster than anybody would ever expected. They're going to knock one of those top two or three teams off. The Rockets, for crying out loud, not this year, obviously, but last year. It just seemed like that was great. And now it's the Warriors, and that's it. Everybody else is second tier. Everybody else is who's going to lose to the Warriors in the Western Conference Finals. It is really irrelevant. The Thunder, one of the top three teams, maybe top two teams in the West, is now irrelevant. The Spurs are struggling to find a way to match that. They couldn't even beat this Thunder team now last year, and now this coming season, the Warriors are going to be way better than that. It just feels like you said, maybe four, five, six teams were all the dominant teams and everybody else was watching. In one whole half of the league, the Western Conference, it's where most of the power resided. It's now just been relegated to one team, and that's what I fear for as far as the popularity of the game.
Yeah, I mean, I can see that. But even, yeah, for sure. But there's still some interesting things to watch in the West. Like the Grizzlies will be kind of interesting now that they got Chandler Parsons. It is definitely, like you said, the inevitability is kind of basically the Warriors. Barring an injury, like I said, no one wants to see anybody get hurt. Like, you don't want to see KD or Steph get hurt. But, I mean, injuries do happen. So if there is an injury, maybe that opens something up. Like I said, there's nothing ever guaranteed. And we did see when the Heat came together as the big three that there were some problems in the first year. Yeah, they should have probably won the championship. They didn't. They fell apart in the finals that year. So while it does seem like there is inevitability with this. A lot of people thought the same thing of this past Warriors team, and the Cavaliers came out and they beat them in the finals. So while it does seem like, yeah, the Warriors will probably run away and hide in the West, and they are clearly on paper better than everybody else, sometimes it doesn't go as you seem like it's going to. So hopefully that there will be some other interesting storylines in the West. Hopefully the Spurs don't fall off too much. Hopefully the Grizzlies do kind of bounce back to stay healthy, and they have Chandler Parsons now. Thunder will be interesting to see what they do with Russell Westbrook. Like I said, hopefully that there are still enough good storylines there where they at least those are interesting to follow, even if the Warriors are way more dominant than everybody else.
Yeah, I think you summarized it, though, in your first answer, Jason, when the answer was, well, maybe somebody will get hurt. Barring an injury, those Warriors are going to run away and hide. Yeah, there might be individual interesting storylines over there, but from a competitive standpoint, once the Western Conference playoffs begin, I think the interest is going to be so lacking in every series except for the Warriors series, and are they going to sweep them all like the Cavaliers almost did, or what's it going to take? It's just and even the Cavaliers who beat the Warriors in the finals, obviously, how many times did the ball find its way to Harrison Barnes' hands, and how many times did he clang his way through those finals, giving the Cavaliers new life? Now the guy taking that last pass is going to be Kevin Durant instead of Harrison Barnes.
Yeah.
That's a scary, scary thing when that is now, replacing the weakest spot of that Golden State offense. And that's, like I said, that's what I fear is it just becomes non-competitive. Hey, last thing, Jason, we'll let you run. Just the overall money thing, where we are. The names that you've heard for the last 4 or 5 days, Mozgov, $64 million. Conley, the highest-paid player in the history of the sport, $153 million for 5 years, a $30 million guy who is probably a top 30 or 40 player in the NBA. Just your opinion on where the crazy salaries have gone. Is it okay? Can it last? Will the league survive this? Will the league be able to grow and thrive? Or is this going to be something that actually it's going to be something they wish they hadn't done 2 or 3 years from now?
Yeah, like I kind of mentioned that I do wonder if what happened this offseason will kind of lead to another possible lockout and then changing of the CBA. And I think one of the things they might have really maybe regret, I guess this was more the players' union, one of the proposals on the table was smoothing out the cap increase so that there wasn't just such a huge jump. That's what led to these huge salaries. But so many teams have cap space. And you look at Mike Conley, it's crazy to think about how he is the biggest contract in history, but it's all about timing. He was up for a 5-year max contract on a team that needed him, and there was no one else that they could go out and sign that was better. So he just winds up getting that max contract, and they have the money to pay him, and he ends up getting the most. So it's just with this offseason, it was all about timing, and with so many teams having cap space, like you said, the Mozgov signing, some of these other ones as well, they seem so outlandish when you're paying that much money for role players. But it was just the way it is with this huge cap jump, and because they did not smooth the cap jump over several years, and it ended up being over a $24 million cap jump, it just ended up being like that. So I don't think it's going to hurt the NBA or anything. I do think that, like I said, they're probably going to end up having, I don't know if it's going to be a long lockout or even hopefully they don't. Hopefully there's no lockout at all, but they're definitely going to revisit the collective bargaining agreement. Perhaps they look at doing stuff with max salaries. I know that's been a popular argument. Should they have the max salary or should they have something where the best players can get what they're actually worth on the market, which would then give them more money, but then the lower players wouldn't get nearly as much? And that's obviously a really controversial topic that's an argument that can go on forever. People talk about hard caps, so teams can't spend as much money as they want. There's a lot of things they're going to look at with this collective bargaining agreement. Hopefully that there is no lockout, or hopefully if there is a lockout, that they're able to come to an agreement soon and we don't have to miss any games next year.
You know what? I'm not, Jason. I'm not a gambling man. I don't gamble. I don't go to Vegas and spend money because I can't afford to lose it. But if you gave me your money and said, go to Vegas and spend this for me, give me $10,000, who do you want me to put your $10,000 on to win the NBA championship in 2016-17?
I mean, I couldn't feel comfortable besides being on anybody at the Warriors. And that's not even get you any money.
Yeah, so, you're right. You got to spend $150 just to win $100 the way the Vegas odds are now.
Exactly. That's the problem. You bet on the Warriors, you're not going to pay out. It's not going to be good. But, I mean, just looking at that team, it's just so hard to see them not win without injuries. Like we mentioned that, just without injuries, KD, it's not always the greatest fit when all these super teams come together. KD should fit in seamlessly. Like you said, he's, instead of Harrison Barnes taking wide open threes, Kevin Durant, and there's such, they seem to be such an unselfish group, and they'll be willing to buy into roles, and they don't care about who gets how many touches. It just seems like they fit so well, and they've added some veterans to fill in some of their gaps with Zaza Pachulia as center. They got David West at the minimum. I mean, it just seems like it would take something outrageous, either injuries or something else, for this to fall apart. So, like I said, even though the payout would be little, I would still put the money on the Warriors and be happy with whatever I did come up with.
Yeah, I think you're right. That's still the best bet for the money. As much as I would like to say that's not the case, because I like the Cavaliers and I have my entire life. But, this is a seismic shift, and I think that balance of power. Like I said, ball gets kicked out to Kevin Durant now. You try to defend the pick and roll with Steph Curry and Kevin Durant, I don't care who you are, you're going to end up with your legs tied together and you're going to fall down no matter what happens. And that is something you just can't really compete with, or at least barring injury, that may be the case. Jason Pat writes for bloggable.com, blogable.com. And SB Nation, Chicago Bulls website. Jason, great conversation. I really appreciate your insight and analysis.
Absolutely. Thanks a lot. Have a good weekend.
You do the same, sir. Thank you so much. All right, there you go. There's Jason Pat. We're trying to cover the NBA from virtually all angles. In the last 5 days, Jim Cushlin, I think in the last 5 days, we have talked to somebody from Cleveland about the impact of all of these things on the Cavs.
Right.
We've talked to somebody from Detroit about the impact on the Pistons as they try to grow and develop. And, of course, the moves that they made, too, with the addition of Ish Smith and with the maxing out of Andre Drummond. We've talked to somebody from Miami about the loss of Wade. We talked to somebody from Oklahoma City about the loss of Durant. We've talked to Oakland about the addition of Durant. And now Chicago about the addition of Wade. I think we've covered almost every major city in some way or another over the last 5 days since free agent frenzy started.
Just about, and they've all done something. I mean, I kind of have a feeling the Cavs' most active day may have been the other day with what they got for in the fallout of Dwayne Wade. The Pistons have been here and there, and then they went out and put out an offer sheet to the big man from San Antonio, and Spurs aren't going to end up matching that, so he'll end up being a Piston. So it's been a funky free agency period. I mean, we knew the whole Kevin Durant thing the whole time, and something was going to happen there, even if it was just going back to Oklahoma City. And then you get the Wade stuff going on, and the real gag, though, is it really, and you guys brought it up there, we've been pretty much bringing up with each of these guys that you named, it really isn't altering the landscape so much as it is shrinking it. If nothing else, especially
well
out west.
That's well observed. That is exactly what it's doing.
Yeah, and like I've been saying, out the west, obviously, it is Golden State, and then kind of everybody else. Maybe San Antonio can give them a fight in the West Finals or something. Who knows? And quite frankly, in the east, based on now Wade in Chicago, and I'm still trying to figure out exactly what their overall plan is, honestly. I thought they were going to get younger when they started getting rid of Rose and losing the other couple guys right at the beginning of free agent.
Yeah, right.
Right. And these guys are name recognizable guys, and they'll help put some fannies in the seats at the United Center. But I agree with what Jason said. This team could be anywhere from fifth to not even in the playoffs, and so much so in the East that the power hasn't shifted that much. It's still Cleveland at the top. I think Boston, Toronto, and Detroit are there at 2, 3, 4. And then there's a giant cliff to, quite frankly, I don't even care because they're all kind of mediocre and it'll be done after round one anyway.
Yeah, I think that's true. And you know what? That's the thing I worry about the most. Again, this is just as a fan of the league is, quote, I don't care.
Yeah.
People aren't going to care because of the very small landscape of power teams, however you phrase it. I think that was very, very well said. It's shrunken now, and that limits interest as well. Hey, congratulations to Matt McGarrity of Toledo. Matt won the tickets to the Marathon Classic we gave away last hour, which, of course, starts on Monday. I've got one more four-pack of tickets to the Classic at Highland Meadows from the 11th through the 17th in Sylvania, and it starts on Monday. We, again, little programming note, we will broadcast live from the Marathon Classic on Thursday and Friday, the first two rounds of the event next week. Looking forward to that. And, of course, Drive Time with Mike Miller, they're going to be there all week long. So if you'd like to be there with us, or at least at the same time we are, even if you're not standing next to us. I got a four-pack for you. One more time, it's caller 10 at 866-240-1065, 866-240-1065. Caller 10, you've got the four-pack of tickets to the Marathon Classic. Let's get a Sports Center, give away those tickets, then come right back and put the finishing touches on this edition of the Extravaganza with a little baseball chat, getting you ready for a couple of big games in the American League. Tigers up in Toronto again tonight. Indians hosting the Yankees again tonight. We'll talk a little bit about that and maybe even get into that tennis story we started on as we finish up the Extravaganza right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Part of the Extravaganza right now by calling 866-240-1065. Now back to the Bob France Extravaganza on 106.5 The Ticket.
Well, it looks like our latest winner is going to be able to walk to the Marathon Classic. He's right there in Sylvania. Dave, and I'm going to try it. Breininger? Did I get it right? I'm going with Breininger, Jim Cushlin, based on the way we're spelling this. But you talked to the gentleman. How does he say his last name?
That was pretty close. I usually ask him to make sure they spell it right more than pronunciation, to be honest.
Oh, so you didn't even ask him?
No, it slipped my mind. I'll be honest, it slipped my mind Breininger. In this one. I need to make sure it was correct on my prize sheet stuff.
All right, well, Dave, you know who you are, and you know you're from Sylvania, and you know that means you get to go down for free. I got four tickets for you to the Marathon Classic, and again, we'll broadcast live from the Classic on Thursday and Friday right here on the Extravaganza. You probably have heard the promos. The Drive Time program with Mike Miller is going to be there all week, so it starts on Monday. It's going to be a great time out of Highland Meadows in Sylvania. So congratulations to Dave and all the other winners who won over the course of the last week or two that we have been giving away passes. Yeah, it's really a different, a total different vibe that you get from, and I know it's just two guys, but a different vibe you get from Chicago about the arrival of Dwayne Wade than you did yesterday, Jim, from the Miami reporter
right.
about the departure of Dwayne Wade. Isn't it kind of strange how that works?
Yeah, a little bit, but it's kind of predictable in a twisted way, too.
Why is that?
Well, because one player, one side is getting the guy and the other one, you know, is losing him. And despite the head scratching.
Yeah, but it's how they feel about that guy is the difference.
In other
words, the Miami guy, you know, was essentially saying, oh, you know, they just couldn't come to an agreement, so it's no big deal. And apparently that means they, or at least he, doesn't feel like Dwayne Wade can play very well anymore or you know, to the level of his former star status. Whereas the Chicago guy's like, hey, we're getting Dwayne Wade. This is a pretty big deal. So it's not just one loses, one gets. It's one is excited about getting, one doesn't really care much about losing. You would have thought that there would have been more anger on the other side.
Well, and it doesn't surprise me that there's not a lot of anger, though, on the one side, because it is Miami, and we've kind of at times gone over this. I mentioned it yesterday in this context. They're not as passionate as you get around Cleveland or Detroit or what have you in this region. It's a different sports mindset down there. I mean, you know, nobody go. Heck, we're talking pro things. Think of the college level. Nobody goes to Miami games, and to a degree, that was true even when they were good.
Yeah, that's true. We talked about that some when we would see the stands down there in the arena, American Airlines Arena, you know, in the second quarter. And it's like, why are only half the stands full? Then in, you know, late.
I'm referring to other sports. I'm thinking, I'm even branching out to the U. Even when they're halfway decent or good, they weren't selling out the old Orange Bowl and the same stadium that the Dolphins play. And they don't sell it. Their attendance is horrid right now.
That's a great point. That's just the kind of mindset, I guess, that they have down there. They have, and some people, same thing as in L.A. Why do you think the L.A. lost the National Football League for 30 years? You know, and how come we don't have a football team in our second largest market? I mean, it's crazy to not have take advantage of that fan base. Well, the fact of the matter is, and what they would say is, there's a lot more to do down here. There's more to do in South Beach than go to basketball games, football games. There's a lot more to do in Los Angeles than go to these games as well. We didn't miss it. You know, they feel like their way of life, their culture of life, whatever, you know, makes sports a third or fourth priority, whereas in a place like Detroit or Cleveland or some other cities where maybe weather is a little bit different and opportunities are a little bit different, it's closer to job one than it is to, you know, to third or fourth on the entertainment list. And I think maybe that's true of the folks down in South Beach.
Yeah, it very well could be, and that seems to be the case, and it's not the first time that kind of a notion popped up. I mean, I was having fun on Twitter the day of the Cavs title parade, which goodness, Bob, can you believe that was over 2 weeks ago now?
Unbelievable.
And the one that I had to retweet because I thought it was just brilliant was side-by-side pictures of the Cleveland rally versus one of the LeBron winning in Miami rallies,
yeah,
and the
I
pictures
saw that
are
too.
So starkly different.
But there's some context there, and I'm trying to be fair here because I don't, you know, I have no reason to defend the Miami fans, but I have to say I have a lot of friends in Miami. Most of them are ex-college teammates. We recruited down there in South Florida very heavily back in the late 1980s when I was in college. And I got a lot of friends down there that I played with who really took me to task for retweeting and for posting on Facebook that picture that you're talking about, that side-by-side. And they said, bro, come on, tell the truth here. And they told me the truth, that particular area that picture was taken in of the Miami parade, it was like an overpass there. And there was no place for fans to stand.
Right.
There was no, you know, it was illegal to you know, crowd that area there. Somebody took that picture from that angle where there were very few people because of the, you know, the geography of the area there. But in the main thoroughway or thoroughfare of the parade, you know, down whatever street it is they do it down there in Miami, that there were throngs of people on either side of the street, just like there were in Cleveland. So somebody had some fun with that. Somebody had some fun with, here's what they did in Miami. Look at that. Woo!
Well, I will take your source's word for it, and I stand corrected, but it doesn't change the overall seemingly fact of the different attitudes amongst the people in those various regions.
It doesn't change.
It's pretty obvious to most people.
Right. It does not change it at all. The attitude down there, but it does give some context to the parade thing. Let me get a call or two in here before top of the hour and drive time with Mike Miller. Let's go to a Wallbridge and say good afternoon to Joe right here on the ticket. Hi, Joe. How are you, sir?
Doing great, sir. Love your program.
Thank you so much. What's on your mind?
Hey, just, I'm a little surprised and taken back the fact that you aren't still touting the Cavs should be the favorite for next year's NBA Finals because they're the champs, man.
They are, but the team that they beat to win that title is not the same team they're going to have to play next year to defend that title. And that team they're going to have to play next year, to me, is extraordinarily better when you substitute in Kevin Durant for Harrison Barnes in what was already a tremendously dangerous lineup. I think the Warriors are easily, well, let's put it this way. Vegas doesn't usually make bets to lose. They like to win. And they have installed the Warriors as 2-3 favorites. You've got to spend $150 to win $100 on the Warriors to win the title. I think Vegas knows what they're doing.
Well, they know what they're doing, but sometimes they're wrong, too.
No, of course. I'm not saying they're not. I'm just saying they, generally speaking, though, they don't and they won't, lay odds out there that are going to cost them money. They make their decisions on what they really believe is going to make them money. And guess what? I think they're right here. I think does that mean the Cavs can't win? Don't misunderstand me, Joe. I'm not saying they can't beat them. I didn't think they'd beat them this year. Most people that I know said the Warriors in 7 in this NBA's final. And I'm one of them. And I was glad to be wrong that the Cavaliers somehow shocked the world and won 2 games on Golden State's floor in the last 3 games of the series. But, the next time around, it's going to be that much harder because, again, you've got one of the 3 best players in the world joining another one of the 3 best players in the world, playing against LeBron James, who is the other of the 3 best players in the world, and some other great ones. I just think it's a very, very much tougher road to hoe the next time around.
Oh, agree 100%. I was just, I know that you're a big Cleveland fan, and I just wanted to see why you were so quick to not consider the Cavs the favorite for next year.
Yeah, well, you know, like I said, I predict things with my head. I wish for them in my heart. I wish and hope the Cavaliers are able to defend their championship and win 2 in a row, and that's what I will hope in my heart. But if I had to predict, just looking at the lineups and looking what Kevin Durant brings and what kind of a tremendous player he is, if they find the same chemistry that the Cavs finally found with Kyrie and LeBron and Kevin Love and J.R. Smith and Tristan doing his thing, if they find that chemistry too, I just think their talent level is a little bit too off the charts, even for the Cavs to deal with in a series. Now, we say that in July of 2016. In June of 2017, we may have a very different perspective on it once we see how it all plays out. But for now, like I said, I think Vegas is on the right track here by saying that's got to be the favorite.
Yeah, I completely agree. Hey, love listening to your program, man. Great show.
Thanks, Joe. I appreciate it, brother. Have a great one. Have yourself a safe weekend, too. Thanks so much.
The interesting part about that is because right now I'd have to side on that kind of prediction, but I keep in my head, I can't get around the fact that on the flip side of that, it's early July 2016, and I feel I could tell you with real close to certainty what next May's East semifinal matchups will be. For me, by the way, it's Cleveland v. Detroit and Boston v. Toronto.
You got the Pistons going to the semis.
Yes, I do. Yes, okay. I do, because I think they'll get high enough to four. This is where I'm still kind of confused overall as to what the Bulls are kind of doing. Miami's decimated in a way after not just losing Wade, but, you know, they lost Deng as well and couldn't get any big names to come down there. Atlanta, as I mentioned the other day, they swapped Teague and Horford for basically Dwight Howard. That's a net negative as far as I'm concerned. Indiana's okay, but I don't see him getting past round one. I think those four in the East are higher up than anybody. So it's July of 2016, and I feel like with close to certainty I can tell you what next May's East semifinal matchups are. And then the biggest one, of course, and I think you and a lot of others probably out there agree with this, because this is what Durant staying in the West, and we kind of went over this earlier in the week, this is what Durant staying in the West really means, is you're almost guaranteed to have Cavs-Warriors in the finals again next year.
Yeah, and you know what? I'll tell you, there's no reason to think that that won't be the case for the next two, three, or four years. I mean, I'm not kidding. We could really see what we saw in the 80s for so long.
Yeah, when as
we
long saw as LeBron Warriors, doesn't decide he feels like, okay, my missions are accomplished, now let's go to the next greener pasture. Assuming that doesn't happen, yeah, you could be looking at Cavs Warriors for the next two, 3 years.
Yeah, and it could end up, like I said, in the 80s with the Celtics and the Lakers, where Magic and Bird played one another over and over and over and over again. And I can't really see anything getting in the way of that. Now, obviously, a lot of things, another super team could form. You know, we could have a bunch of other superstars getting together and saying, oh, yeah, well, how about this? And here's our big four. And suddenly the Warriors are vulnerable or the Cavs are vulnerable. But for now, that's how it looks. All right, that's all the time we've got. Apologies to anybody we left behind. And thanks so much to everybody who listened, who called, who texted or tweeted or anything else. We appreciate you being a part of the show. Stay where you are. Drive Time with Mike Miller is coming your way. Have a safe weekend, and we'll talk to you again Monday at 3 o'clock right here on The Ticket.